Hello everyone and welcome to the Knee Down Podcast. Today we have two guests. My name is Matthew Grant and today we're being joined with Craig Dickinson and current ESBK and Junior GP Superstock 600 rider Declan van Rosmalen. Great to have you back, Declan. It's always fun to chat to a real rider for both myself and Craig. How are you, mate?
Not too bad. And yourself, dude?
I'm very well. I've been chatting away with Craig on your arrival to the podcast this evening. Now we've had some good fun, haven't we, Craig? How are you doing tonight, mate?
Yeah, no, I'm good. Fashionably late as always, riders, eh?
Here we go.
So for reference, these guys actually work together at the grid on the Junior GP paddock, all within the IUM Motorsports team. Of course, Craig and Declan will be probably bouncing off each other in today's podcast, which I'm looking forward to see how this dynamic works. So let's see how it goes. But today we do have an objective, we do have a plan, and that is, of course, to discuss the upcoming Aragon GP. Now, this is why we brought two good friends along today, because these two have experience at this circuit, and one in particular will be riding there this year as well as last year as well, of course. And that is, of course, Declan. So we actually have a couple of questions for you today that we're going to speed fire you and a couple of quick questions as well. And and just generally pick your brains about the track, because I think something that a lot of people miss from watching MotoGP is that rider input. Unfortunately, I can't give that input. So that's why your brains will be picked in this one. So I hope you're ready for something like that today.
Very ready. Absolutely. Oh, excited.
Nice one, mate. So, Craig, you got a few questions for Declan you want to start off with, and then we'll get into the discussion regarding the upcoming Aragon GP and how it'll all intertwine.
Yeah, I mean, so what is it you reckon, Dec, that makes Aragon like a unique track from a riding perspective?
I mean, unique. I don't know, dude. Like, the track is the track. You know, it's a sick track. I absolutely love that track. It's a fun track to ride. I mean, I've definitely struggled there quite a bit, but doing some testing there and figuring that out, I really enjoy the track, to be honest. It's a very nice layout of the track.
Yeah. So, and is there any corner at Aragon that you think people will sort of struggle with, that's kind of like the more difficult of the tracks?
Definitely like after the chicane, like that long left, like hard braking for that tight left, like I think that's hard, but maybe actually the chicane is really hard going into it down the hill. Like you can't push that corner. Like you really have to be very patient, you know. And I think a lot of people in the Junior GP pushed it a lot and could not really get it right.
Yeah, and that's so I think that's turn 7, 8 and 9, and being there from the track side, actually you really don't get any understanding of just how steep that downhill is.
Yeah,
so from that it, and it goes and goes, so your first right-hander is downhill braking and then you immediately flick left, but all the while you're still going downhill, and that left is so important because the next corner is flat out.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And believe it or not, like I swear, when we were racing there, Craig, we actually had to use brake on the flip or downshift on the flip with a little bit of brake if you could get it down, which is crazy. You think you wouldn't use brake there, but you really do. It's weird.
Is this something the GP boys could possibly do, and would that help them?
Oh, I think it'd be a struggle on those bikes, to be honest. Like, I think with their experience and their riding, I think they probably get so much of it stopped coming down the hill and like while going into the corner. Like I think they get it stopped enough, but I think it may help a little bit if they're pulling 2 or 3 bar, maybe, you know.
So then I guess that may be the answer to this question, but which part do you reckon rewards bravery, risk to reward?
Risk to reward. Oh, definitely where, honestly, risk to reward, like if you're thinking last lap risk for reward, it has to be where Pecco went underneath Alex Marquez, like where they crashed, right? I think those two corners before going into the tight right, I think that's a risk for reward for sure. If you can make it stick, you know? Like if you get the flip fast enough and be able to pull just a little bit, even a tenth or two, then that flip onto the back straight, you should be, I think that's where the risk to reward will come around.
And during these moments of like history of like Alex Marquez, Pecco Bagnaia crashing, turn 12, Marquez and Pedrosa where he clipped his CCS and Danny Pedrosa flipped off. In those moments, is there any minds of thinking that, oh my goodness, this is the corner that Marquez crashed at, this is the corner that this happened? Is there anything that pops into your head during the practice or even the track walk?
Honestly, like it's definitely track walk. Like when we do track walks, like we actually quite talk about it a lot sometimes, like depending on which track, like this is where they've crashed, this is where this has happened. And you know, maybe in practice, like sometimes depending on if I haven't been to the track, never been to the track that the GP has been to, I'm like, oh shit, like how lucky am I that I get to
Yeah, of
ride
course.
E track, you know what I mean? So, but it doesn't really pop up, only on a track.
Yeah. I think you're giving a racer's mind too much credit there, Matt. It's very much everything disappears once the visor comes down. Maybe on a slowdown lap or like, the first sighting lap, and then it's straight to business. On we go. And also that Aragon itself like leads to a lot of overtaking. It's a bit like Silverstone in the sense that it's a really wide track, so there's a lot of varying lines, and you can run a lot of corner speed to make those overtakes, like Declan's saying. Sacrifice the first part to set up a move for the second kind of thing. And I guess, yeah, that sort of leads perfectly to how physical do you think Aragon's going to be over a race distance as the track itself?
Definitely very physical, to be honest. Like I think because there's so it's such a big track. Like I can't even remember the lap times we were doing, but it was close to a 2 minute. It was still pretty big. So and like race distance for sure, like 17 laps. It's a lot of laps, but I just there's so much movement going around on the bike. You're always constantly flipping left, right, like constantly moving. So I think once everyone hits like the 14th, 15th lap is where everyone starts to struggle because it's just so physical on your body. You're just doing so much. And depending on what time of the year you're there with the heat, just you're burning so much. It's a physical track, so physical.
Yeah, that's something. I think it's earlier this year than it has been. And I mean, we were at Jerez last week and it was 40 degrees ambient temperature. And Aragon is in the middle of nowhere. It's just basically desert territory for Spain. So yeah, it's gonna be a hot weekend, I think. And well, Declan, like the 40 degree ambient, 61 degree track temperature is not fun to do 18 plus laps around.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Any signs of dread coming up to it when that comes on the calendar next?
Oh man, honestly, it's just a little bit, you know. But as it's like Craig says, as soon as the green light goes out and the lights turn off, it's like, yeah, I'm in it. And but to be honest, I don't really get fatigued in races. I don't like lose time. I don't slow down. Like I kind of maintain the whole race. I think the first couple of laps, yeah, like just fighting, but I don't really get tired or burned out as fast, to be
Well, we
honest.
noticed in Jerez you went quicker towards the end of the race, right? In the previous round, gathering 9 places and getting right towards the end of the points, towards right at the end of it.
So close. Yeah, I was pretty close. I was pretty close. I just got there on the last lap.
So comparing Jerez and now Aragon, which is MotoGP, is fast approaching. What would you say the key difference is in the racing strategy for the Stock 600s compared to MotoGP? Does it impact the way you tackle things differently, or is it a simple case of racing is racing and this is how we do it? Or is there another mindset and strategic to it?
I mean, it's definitely like racing is racing, of course. Like you never know what happens. Everything just kind of, you know, some people will think, some people won't think, you know. I mean, there's always different tactics. Like, you can always go with a plan and try and stick with that plan or something, you know? Like, for qualifying for us, like, we try and do a plan. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. So I think it's just the right state of mind if what you're thinking about, like, if you're thinking in the race and not just going for anything, like, just going for it, I think it's also tactical as well, you know? But yeah, but racing is still racing. Like, you're just doing whatever you can.
Yeah. And is there anything that you're going to be potentially taking away from this weekend, like for yourself? Will you watch the race and kind of see, okay, they do this that way and maybe try that when you next go?
Definitely 100%. Like, like, they could have way different lines than us. You know, there'll be a lot of different lines, but I'm curious to like really zone in and watch like a lot of the onboard footage as well, and like actually just like sit there and visually see what they're doing on the bike and how they're making changes on the bike while they're like moving from left to right, because there is definitely some stuff I need to work on that will help me at that track for sure. So definitely with
If I can just jump in, have you ever picked up from something in the past that has actually then been useful for your own riding from watching MotoGP or even World Superbike, for example?
definitely the way the definitely like the way that they move on the bike. Like, I used to be very aggressive in my movements, and like I'd really throw the bike over a lot, whereas they kind of like they make one move, and then as they flip over or something like that, or just anything, they're kind of just relaxed and stay seated, and they just move very gradually at the end once they're exiting the corner. Like, they don't try and get straight back into a full tuck or make any aggressive movements that will make the bike upsetting or uncomfortable. So definitely that, because I used to make the bike go out of shape. I used to move too fast, move the handlebars. So I've definitely noticed that when I'd watch the GP a lot.
Nice. And who do you think on the MotoGP field? I think there's only one answer for this, but on the MotoGP grid, who do you think attacks Aragon or rides Aragon the best? Who do you think it suits
Oh,
the
Marquez.
most?
Marquez,
Yeah.
obvious. Marquez,
Yeah.
obvious.
Is that Alex Marquez he's saying? I think he's saying Alex Marquez,
Yeah,
yeah.
Alex. Yeah,
Alex Marquez, yeah.
I hope so too, you know what I
Yeah,
mean?
I
That would
agree.
I think that would be cool, but we just know, you know, Marquez, that's his track. The Spanish tracks are his tracks, you
Yeah.
know?
And if it's been dusty, we get a little bit of rain or anything like that, it's over. Marquez is dominating. Was it 8 tenths he was qualified in pole last season? Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Fox.
I think that as well was down they had a new surface and it was like a really abrasive surface. You know all too well how abrasive deck. I mean when we were there they had a lot of issues with riders' leathers just like disintegrating because of the I don't know what it was, maybe the treatment of the surface or the tarmac that they use, but yeah, it's really, really abrasive. So we'll have to see how that's developed over the last year since they were last there.
Definitely hope that's better.
So
Definitely.
regarding the bike for you then, Deck, is it a front tire track or rear tire track, in your opinion?
Rear tire. Definitely rear tire.
And
Because
that's important because of the long straight, getting that grip and for those corners, or is it just everywhere in general?
just everywhere in general, honestly, like, you could be the bravest on the brakes and go deeper, but it's all about the exit. Like, you got to think of the exit, you know? Like, someone can go braking 20 meters deeper, but then I can brake 20 meters before and still catch you like going in, but like have mine slowed down while you're trying to figure out how to get it stopped. But then I can set you up for a pass on the exit, you know? It's just all about the exit. So rear.
I find that incredibly fascinating because, as a fan's perspective, I would have thought it was a front end track. I would have thought the front
Really?
end stability would have been more important. But now, listening to that, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because
No,
there's a
that's.
lot of fast corners there. You know, the checker corner going up to turn four, turn five, a corner you're not particularly fond of, which we'll get to later. And then, of course, the whole chicane going up to the Marquez corner, that long left hander where you're on the left hand side for probably I don't know how many meters, but like 100 meters, something, you're on the left-hand side for a long time. So I guess that makes a lot of sense. It really does.
Yeah. Because also it's like, too, it's like, even though like, yeah, front tire can also play a part as well. But when you're on the throttle for so much, like when the tire just spins, like, you know, you can get, Craig knows, of course, because we always talk about and stuff. The rear just kind of makes the bike turn itself, you know, like it's just spinning, but it's driving and it turns the bike as you're going. So, you know, that's why a lot of it's also just rear tire as well. You know, it just kind of makes the bike go where you want to go if you get spin.
Yeah. Steering the bike with the rear tire. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that leads perfectly into to kind of how important do you think having traction at Aragon is compared to other tracks?
I mean, as of right now, from like where it was, where we were at last time, I think like it's definitely a crazy track with grip level. Crazy. Like online, so much grip. Like you could run a good decent amount of tires or laps on a tire, rear tire, through that track, but it's definitely just different asphalt. It's so weird. It's just weird, different asphalt, but very grippy. Very grippy.
Yeah.
And in comparison to the previous round in Jerez, how will the tires be different, or how will it be similar with that different asphalt?
I think, honestly, it's going to be better than Jerez. I think we're going to have so much more grip to where, depending on the heat as well, I think we're going to burn through a tire pretty fast, honestly. Like, I really think so, you know? Obviously, I didn't get to be in the qualifying for Junior GP last year of Aragon. But in the rain, apparently, I think F. Dino was saying it was grippy but very slippery at the same time. Like, I can't remember, Craig, but I remember when we were watching qualifying, was telling us it was just very grippy and slippery at the same time.
Yeah, it's sort of the rain plays an interesting part in that your racing line in the dry is super grippy because of all the rubber that's been laid down.
Yes.
But then when the wet comes, it becomes kind of greasy because of the rubber that's been laid down. So it has the opposite effect.
Exactly.
So you almost want to race offline in the wet in that scenario.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And how do you trick your brain into doing that and avoiding the optimal racing line?
For me, like, it's definitely got to use your brains. Like, I mean, the first, it's just a build session, you know? Like, I think definitely building. Can't say I'm still the greatest at it. You know, Estoril's taught me some lessons, but usually just building into it and, like, trying different stuff. You know, different lines, different braking, but staying offline is pretty hard because you've just been doing it. Say you've been riding Thursday, Friday, and it's just been sunny and it's been hot. Next thing you know, you go into Saturday and it's just completely rained out. Now you have to try and flip your brain to like, okay, now I have to try and stop riding these lines because it's muscle memory now. It's just the same thing over and over again, just trying to find little tents. So I it's really hard to do, to be honest. I think it's really hard to do.
That's what separates you aliens to the likes of someone like me who's sitting here doing the Knee Down podcast. I don't think I could. It'd be like a case of, this is the way, this is the method, I'll do it.
That's
fascinating. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And sort of on that topic of going offline and stuff, I think you touched on it before, is there places in Aragon where you take the wrong line to set up an overtake?
Oof. I mean, for me, definitely, like, yes, honestly, like, you can. If you know, you can make it stick. But it also, I think, it has to be at the right place. Right place, like, and you have to be, like, so on point. But as long as it's, like, one lap or two lap you're trying to do it, as long as it's not consistent, I think it's not worth it. But if you can make a pause, sweet. But it has to stick. It has to stick.
What about turn 14, 15? Like the Marquez lunge. We've seen incredible moves in there over the past. He tried it on Pecco numerous times. And even in the past, I think, we've seen the likes of Johann Zarco, Karl Crutchlow, and all of them trying to get through that tight chicane, that tight left-hander, which then puts them on the back end, because then the other ride then just says, okay, come on through, and then I'll pass.
Exactly. And I think, definitely for even 600s, like, I think you can do it for sure, but you are going to be slow on that back straight. Maybe if it's like you line them up for that first right and you like really get just on the outside of the rear tire as getting to the apex and you kind of make it like how Marquez does and stuff. But I think like for the R6s, the acceleration is so big and so good. It just depends on if you can make it work. I think it's risky, but it's something to try. But if you're in a tight race and that third place there, so they can just, they'll just wait and then get that slip and get a double bike slip or, you know, but I think it can work, but not work.
Random question before I pass back over to Craig, but how long does that straight feel on the 600?
So long.
Like, it looks it on the television when you watch anything from the thousands to the 765s to the 250s. It looks like an eternity.
Yeah. You sit in sixth gear for quite a while. Like you just, you know, you get fifth, and usually we're fifth gear on every other straight. Like we never click six, never. And you get into sixth gear on that back straight, and it's just sitting there, just da 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 da. Jeez, you can read a book almost.
You need Craig's jokes.
I know.
Down the straight. And it's strange as well because it's a long straight and you come onto it so slowly. Like you come out of the first or second gear chicane and then you're down that straight. Just it's almost like a drag race.
Literally. It is not.
Yeah. Yeah, I think quick fire questions, Matt.
I think I got what I wanted out of it. We've got quite a good thing, but I tell you what, I'm really hoping the guys are enjoying this from anyone who's watching the Knee Down podcast, because I think we've really got onto something special here, because having that rider mindset is something that is so unique and so invaluable that I'm already learned something just from the first 20 minutes of this podcast. So Declan, big thanks for joining us, and actually a massive shout out to Craig. It was Craig's suggestion in the first place to bring you on and pick your brain. So
there we go. Yeah, thank you, Craig. Appreciate it, Craig.
Every once in a while, the brain works.
Yeah, just
little stroke of genius. So if you are enjoying, don't forget to like and subscribe, guys. But we are now going to briefly move on to the quickfire questions. I'm thinking, Craig, I'll ask the first one, you ask the second one. We'll just absolutely rinse him and get the most out of him. So here we go, then. So then, don't have to be the absolute perfect answer. Just give it the best shot you've got, Deck. Here we go. What's your favourite corner at the Aragon GP?
Six.
And your least favourite?
Two.
Now, I think I know the answer to this question. It's actually been touched on in a previous podcast. But for those who didn't see it, we've got to ask you again. What is or ever had a oh no moment in the circuit of Aragon?
Yeah, the big oh no is the turn four. Oh no, that was a big oh no. Yeah, first weekend out, like, what, first day, out lap, just finished testing last week, and then we weren't supposed to go offline, big high side, huge, just offline that tad, and yeah, just fat foot peg through the arm.
Yeah, you got the scar to prove it.
Yeah.
Do you still think of that, though?
Do I think of it? Oh, yeah, I definitely... I definitely think about it. It's hard to see.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
Yeah. But such an awkward, you know, you could probably crash 1,000 times and never have it happen to you again.
Yeah, exactly.
And then to just one in 1,000 time, the foot peg randomly lands on your arm and leaves you with a hole.
Yeah. You don't even feel it. The adrenaline just goes straight through it until you get up and you're like, oh, what's just happened? You know?
So do you have to hold him around that corner, Craig, to make sure he doesn't have any like flashbacks of when he goes through? This is the track walk, and he starts.
He was practically he got to me pretty fast. Yeah. The ambulance. He was right there, and I was like, "Oh, dude, what's up?" You know.
Yeah. So I was, down at the Marquez section, and the access roads lead you up pretty quickly. And once I saw, because the two riders went out together, and I saw one of them and not Declan. So I was like, okay, look behind me, and there was a yellow flag there. I was like, let's go, and got there. And yeah, he's just like, I don't know what happened. Like, oh, there's a hole in your arm. He's like, yeah.
I know you'll tease Declan, and I know you bully him like a little brother, but did you have any feeling of panic when that happened, or is it a case of no, he's just crashed and it's like desensitized?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, we have fun with each other, and it is, like a brotherly relationship. But yeah, for sure, you don't want anyone to fall down, let
No, of
alone
course not.
someone you're close to. So yeah, there is that kind of like, oh dear, because if someone falls, and I think the session was red flag, maybe even,
Yeah.
then you know that it's like
Oh.
it's a level above just a small off. So you don't know what's kind of ahead of you, but you ultimately it's a weird feeling in that, like firefighters run towards the fire, police run towards the danger. You need to go there just to put your mind at ease and make sure he's okay, like regardless of what might be on the other side for you. But yeah.
I think that's rather sweet. I'm glad that's a, there's a definitely a nice part to you, Craig, in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, I got him back in the medical center. I think I was winding him up to the nurses.
Oh
So,
yeah,
yeah.
trying wouldn't give me any medication.
So the way I wrote these questions out, it would be segueing nice to this particular question here because you've had that bad moment in turn four. Is there anything you'd change about the layout if you could? Maybe remove turn four, perhaps.
Honestly, turn four was sick because it's full pinned. Like you're cranked over, full pinned. I think if I had to get rid of any corner, it would definitely be that chicane going downhill. The down or no? Oh, sorry, I apologize. The fast left,
The
braking.
Marquez corner.
That's such a weird. I always would miss that corner. Like I would always try find a brake marker, could never do it. Like that's something. That's where I changed the layout just a little bit.
If the option ever came to do the national, would you prefer to do the national layout then? That
So
needs
they
to the
go
entire.
straight,
Yeah,
straight onto the back straight.
that would actually kind of be sick to do because it's like long left, and then you're coming up to a straight pinned. I would actually kind of love to do that. That would be pretty sick because now you're already exiting the corner in fourth gear, about to click fifth. Like I know you do exit in fifth gear on the 600s, so it would be pretty sick to actually see because then it'd be even longer that straightaway. So.
Because turn three, it cuts off as well for another version, if I'm not mistaken, that adds another chicane. Is that correct? I think
Three.
some car thingies use it. Cuts off right before you get to the checker corner on the left-hand side. I think around. So that cuts out the entirety of that, the high undulation part, I guess.
I remember
There's
that.
also I think the last turn goes on into like a more sharper
That's
hairpin.
right, yeah. It's like a bus stop
Yeah.
chicane, isn't it? It's really
Yeah.
tight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or hairpin, should I say. Sorry, Craig, next
Yeah.
question, please.
So, what's your favorite MotoGP race at Aragon from memory?
Oh man, from memory, I would have to say it was. I definitely really liked last year's. Last year's was pretty good, just not because of the front leaders, but definitely like the race itself with everyone. There was a lot of dicing going around. But maybe Marquez and Rossi in shoes. When was it? 2017? When Marquez just got him on the through the Marquez corner.
Well, I think it was Pedrosa, right?
Pedrosa's. So yeah, it
Yeah,
was
I think
one.
it was Danny and Rossi exchanging positions all the time from turn
Yeah,
three to yeah.
I like a
That is
good
a
dog.
great race.
Love a good dog fight. That's the best race.
I think that was 2015 because it was those points were critical for the world championship as well, and he couldn't quite beat Danny. I think that's right. Yeah. I guess that brings me to another question, because we mentioned a former rider there. Which former rider in MotoGP would you like to see this track? Or, sorry, like to see on this track, and who do you think would enjoy it?
Definitely Lorenzo. Jorge Lorenzo.
He won quite a few times. Was it three times? I think he won, yeah. Maybe? Pretty good, yeah. On the Yamaha, considering, especially you need speed. What about you, Greg? What do you reckon?
My choice is based on one corner, and that's that long left that leads into Marquez. I just would love to see what he does, and it's either Casey Stoner or Gary McCoy. Just for, you know, like you said, it's where you spin the wheel up, and I think you'd get some great action shots out of those two.
I totally agree, because the Marquez corner could be quite similar to the Stoner corner in that regard, where you're on the left-hander, which, Declan, you're familiar with again, letting that rear tire spin.
Loving it.
Yeah, that would make a sense. I would also agree. I'd say Casey Stoner or maybe someone like Mick Doohan.
Mick Doohan. Yeah.
She'll be your hero. Same as Casey Stoner.
I hear her, to be honest. Like, I grew up watching that guy, and I have a signed poster and stuff in our living room of it. So
That's great. So the final sort of interview questions for you then, Dec. If you were racing a MotoGP this weekend, what do you think would be your biggest challenge?
Oof. If I was racing there?
In MotoGP with the big boys.
Oh, jeez. Biggest challenge would just be getting over the fear of trying to race one of those bikes. You know what I mean? Especially at a track that I would say I'm somewhat okay at. Like, I'm good, but like, I wouldn't have that much experience, but definitely just trying to fight that bike around that track and trying to sit and fight those boys.
And use all the electronics as well, the ride-out device, launch control. Is that something you'd want to try?
Yeah, so bad. It looks so cool. The rider device thing, like entering the straights and stuff, it just looks so sick. It looks so sick.
So long as it's not Fabio's ride-out.
Yeah. All right, no. Yeah, that would be scary. No, I'm going to pass on that one.
Well, I think the other questions we wrote down there, Craig, he's pretty much answered already, hasn't he? He's pretty much on the ball.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, he's got everything in there already.
He's done the tick box exercise. Well done, mate. You've passed with flying colours.
Yeah.
A+. You're on to stage two. We'll get you next time. So I guess, since we've got two fantastic lads in here as well, I think we should talk a bit of MotoGP predictions then about this weekend in Aragon. Have we got any early feelings? I guess we'll go to Declan first, and then you next, Craig, if that's okay with you, mate?
Yeah, that's good.
So what do you reckon, mate? Predictions this weekend. Give us your top three, either in all three classes or just MotoGP. It's entirely up to you.
Okay. MotoGP, I still definitely think Alex, or it'll be Marquez, one. Number one, of course. Alex Marquez, two. And then, I don't know why, I've been between Zarco and Quartararo. Because Quartararo's made that jump on the Yamaha. Like, they've been finding stuff. But apparently, if I'm correct, I just read, like, a couple hours ago, actually, that this is the weekend they're testing the V4 engine. Confirmed that they're doing it this weekend. I'm actually quite keen to see how that goes for Quartararo. But I think between those two, maybe Zarco. I think Zarco may have something. I don't know what it is, but he's just been riding pretty well for the first two rounds, you know? Moto2, I hope for Senna, of course. Senna, it would be sick to see Senna be at the top again. He's been doing
back to back winner.
Yeah, right. Canet, I definitely want Canet. Canet second. And then Senna's teammate. I forgot his name already.
Gonzalez.
Gonzalez. I think he'll win again, hopefully, if he doesn't do something stupid like he did last round. But Moto3, like, I don't really know anyone besides like some of my friends that are in there. I mean, Joel Castle. Like, I know he's up there. But that's them and a couple of my buddies that I know. But it's their rookie year in Moto3, so we're still working through.
That's cool. Maybe you'll have some inspiration for when we spitball in a moment. So, Craig, go on, take the floor, mate. Let me know your three predictions.
Yeah, I'll start where Deck left off. I think Moto 3 is going to be a dogfight. It always is at the tracks where you have the slipstream. I think Rueda has form for just having like breakaway pace, but I don't think it's going to make a difference here. I think we'll probably see 10, 15 guys in the lead group fighting for it, and then it's all down to who's the smartest, really, who plays it the best. Moto 2, I think Manu's going to bounce back and answer some questions. I think maybe Canet can go with him and center off his form for sure. So maybe that's your top three, but in which order, I don't know. Maybe Manu, I think, will for sure try to remake a statement. And then GP, I think this is a round where you bet your mortgage on Mark winning. Pole, sprint race, fastest lap, new lap record, everything. Yeah, and the main race. And then I think there's going to be, I think Bagnaia and Alex are going to fight for second and third. I can't call which one. But yeah, I think Bagnaia will be there this weekend.
I really want to agree with the fact that Manya is going to be up there, but it seems every single time I say he's going to do well, I get the opposite. But
Yeah.
also, I get the opposite when I say Marquez will do well. I said Marquez would dominate Cota, or at least I had a conversation about possibly doing it in a video I did, and yeah, didn't happen. And that's another track you would bet your mortgage on. So I'm really torn, but I think the easy option is, and I'm just going to probably just go for the easy one as well, actually, Marquez. Still completely unsure about Bagnaia. I want to say this will be the weekend he comes back to that same form, has that fire and passion, but it's just so unpredictable, you never know. Alex Marquez 100% will be up there. Don't know if he'll make any mistake. I feel like Silverstone could have been a little bit of a blip. Maybe he's going to get himself back into it, but I don't feel that Alex Marquez can sustain this for the entire season for a full championship charge. I think eventually Mark is going to start to break away, and then it is going to be simple. It'll be Mark, then more Pecco in towards second, and I think it's going to balance out. I'm not sure yet. But I do think Johan Zarco, I'm with you on that one, Derek. I really am. I think Johan Zarco can make it work. Honda works well around this circuit. As we were talking about earlier, so I don't know if we mentioned it in the podcast, actually, but you mentioned earlier, Craig, regarding Aleix Espargaró talking about Johan Zarco riding through the problems of the Honda, the vibration, the chatter. That's a big difference maker in the circuit like this, especially with all the rear wheel chatter and everything else going wrong. So yeah, I'm going to go with Zarco. I love the idea of Fabio Quartararo. It'd be nice to see Yamaha up there fighting it out in a track that hasn't really suited them in the past. So this could be interesting. Moto 2, I think, yeah, Gonzalez is, I think for me, he's a clear winner on that one. Probably connect with him up there, and maybe Jake Dixon in third. I think Jake's needs to get back into his rhythm a little bit, but I think I'll
Yeah,
go for the
he
three.
did. He won last year, didn't he? Dixon at Aragon. But he
Yeah,
just,
pretty good.
the thing I found for Jake and why I excluded him is he just tends to go missing at times.
Yeah,
And that's
Silverstone.
maybe not him personally, but maybe he just doesn't get the setup or is on the same pace as the others. But something just doesn't seem to click on a weekend.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've got a good feeling about him this weekend, so I'm happy to put him in there. But I do agree. He is one of those riders that has to be. Everything has to be perfect. It has to be set up well for him to really perform. But for Moto3, I'm actually going to go against the grain here, and I'm going to say Jose Antonio Rueda dashes off. I've got this
Dash.
feeling that he's just. Yeah, I think so. I think he's going to break away like he did in Thailand.
Okay.
He's got the pace to do it, likes of David Alonso from previous seasons, and I think it is going to be him. I want to give some love to David Almansa, though. I think he was unfortunate in Silverstone. I think he might make it work. I don't know if Adrian Fernandez is back. Is he going to be back this weekend? But I do feel that those Leopard Hondas have something else in the tank, because they are rapid on the straights, and that will sincerely help them down that huge straight. So I think I'd just go for the two Leopard Honda boys because of that benefit that they have with the energy drink that no one's ever had. So yeah, I go for them.
Good picks. We'll have to find out this weekend.
Yeah, I'm rather looking forward to it now. I mean, Aragon's one of those tracks that on the computer game side, I never cared for. I never really got excited for it. If I seen it on the game, I never really bothered about it. But when it went absent in 2023, I actually genuinely wanted to race in it again. And since then, I've enjoyed it. And watching the previous races from Alex Rins beating Alex Marquez many years ago, from Bagnaia winning his first race against Marquez, the dogfight between Rossi and Pedrosa you mentioned earlier, there's been some good races in there that kind of made me feel, yeah, I'm glad that the circuit of, is it Teruel? Is that where it is now? Is it Aragon? Teruel, yeah. So I'm glad to see it back. I think it's going to be two good seasons in a row of it. But if we do get rainfall, we do get some dodgy conditions, you might as well put your bets on Marquez now.
Yeah, put the straight on Marquez instantly.
Tenor straight on.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, because you have Zarco, and Zarco has nothing to lose. No. And that's pretty much what happened in Le Mans. You know, Mark said he tried to chase him and realized it just wasn't for him. So maybe it'd be the same being in Spain, but yeah, Zarco's got nothing to lose in those conditions. So
yeah,
how much is Mark willing to risk?
And is the GP25 really up to scratch? Because there's a bit of a conversation going on. I've seen it on Instagram from MotoGP. Gigi Deligne said, you know, this can't continue. We need to fix this bike so both Marquez and Pecco will be happy with the GP25. So what do you reckon? Do you reckon we could see some little bit of an upset with the GP25? Maybe the GP24 dominates? What do you reckon, Dec?
I mean, I think the GP25... I mean, just looking at Marquez, Marquez is happy with it. He's loving it completely. You know, he has some sort of touch and feeling that he likes with the bike, of course. Pecco, I think Pecco just, like you said, he just doesn't have that feeling of what he had last year. You know, I still definitely think with the 24 engines on the 25 chassis, I mean, they're still faster than any bike on the track. Like, no other bike can keep with those. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I still think that the 25 is a good chassis with the 24 motor, because Marquez is obviously making it. But I think that, I mean, for Pecco, that's been doing it for, you know, 4 years straight, I think he just needs something just to try. They need to change something to get that feeling for both of them, you know. And definitely on the front end. I think they need some work on the front end, because that seems to be a problem this year. It seems to be a big problem this year, you know. But yeah.
Yeah, Pecco in particular is really struggling. And I think we mentioned it before that Mark just kind of hasn't experienced how good the 24 was with riding the 23 last year. And so now jumping up to the 25, it's like it's better than what the 23 was.
Yeah.
So he's happy, and Pecco's kind of not, because it's not as good as the 24 was.
And a track like Aragon, especially, this is what obviously convinced me to think this would be a front-end track, is those ridiculously tight braking zones. Turn 1 is incredibly powerful on the brakes. Turn 12, those are scary braking zones, especially turn 12, that downhill section.
Yeah.
That's where Pecco Bagnaia looked last season phenomenal.
Yeah.
Same as Luffield going into Silverstone last season. I've been preaching about this for quite a while now. Pecco looks terrible on the brakes compared to last season. And I think if that bike is not good this weekend, he might not even finish in the top 10.
It'll
be that dramatic.
Yeah. I mean, even me and Craig were talking about this at Jerez. Like, I was telling him, I was like, I don't even think Pecco will be, if he keeps crashing the way he is, or keeps, you know, just not being able to perform at the front, like you just said, you know, his season's over. You know, like, he's not even going to finish top 3 in the championship, top 5, you know what I mean? Like, and that'll be crazy news, you know? But at least, like, not like he's making up excuses or anything. You can actually see why he's struggling and, you know, what's going on at the same time. But, yeah, I hope he gets top 5, whatever, but I just think the way he's going right now, something needs to change, for sure.
I strongly agree. There's a lot of narrative at the moment that Marc Marquez is sitting inside Pecco's Italian brain and completely unwiring him and making him completely impossible to ride a MotoGP bike. I don't think that is the case. And I think the reason why is another probably a good example, which I'll pass to you. I hope I'm not setting this up for a failure.
Mm.
But if your bike is not set up the way you want it and you don't feel comfortable, you cannot perform. Is that the same for you as... No matter how good you are, if it's not up to, then, you know, the confidence not there, the feeling's not there, I can't do it. It doesn't really matter if your teammate's telling you something or not. If the bike,
yeah,
can't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone has a feeling on a bike, you know what I mean? And it's like, you definitely know when you, when you're missing something on your bike or it's not set up correctly. You're not confident, you're not, of course, comfy, because you just know the outcome of what could possibly happen and what is going to happen or something. You just, you know, you can't, either you can try and push it, but you may get to the edge of the limit a lot faster than what you think that setup could do. So setup is definitely like really key, I think. Like it's the biggest thing you can do out of the whole weekend, you know?
So. And I think that's been their biggest problem this year, is that there's just zero feeling. And so they can't even find the limit because it just goes without warning.
Yeah.
And then the next lap is fine. Like there's no consistency in it and there's no feedback for them. And I think Mark said very early on, like he doesn't know where the limit is yet, but he wasn't sure if that was the bike or just because he was still new to that particular bike at that point in the season. So,
and I think Marquez's crashes all this season have all been front end washouts from, not, I mean, there's not been no high side, thank goodness, but this majority has been front end washouts from turn three in Silverstone last time, from Cota touching the curbs. And that's probably the lack of front end feeling of, as you say, not knowing that limit of that final biting point where I can push that tiny little bit more. It's gone. And you see Pecco in his reaction in Silverstone when he crashed into Brooklands was just, come on, like, what do I need to do?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a mentality thing. I think that's generally the bike that is, it's not, it's just not fit for him at this moment in time. And I think, as we were saying, which we said in the previous podcast, is that Marquez is doing the absolute worst damage because he's proving how good it can be done. But he rides through problems. He has that inept ability that not every rider has, which I think is probably, it is a little bit negative towards Bagnaia, because now he has to say to Tardozzi and Gigi Deligno that the bike's crap, and they go, oh, well, this is the trophies we've won so far.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Leading the championship, so how bad can it be?
Yeah, it puts him in a tough situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Do we have any surprises of the weekend? Do we have any hot takes that we want to discuss? Because I noticed one thing we haven't discussed: our most recent Grand Prix winner, Marco Bezzecchi and Aprilia. So what do we think? Do we think we're going to see another surprise Aprilia up there, or is it going to be a simple case of it was a one-hit wonder in Great Britain?
I think definitely a one-case. I mean, he's going to come into the weekend very excited and very like, okay, now I have to try and maintain something. But I think it was just a one-time lucky thing, you know what I mean? Aprilia performed. I can't lie. Aprilia performed. Their bike did amazing, you know what I mean? So, but I think it may have just been that a one-time thing. That's what I honestly.
Yeah, I think if Mark wasn't racing, then maybe you could go for Bez. But I don't see anyone coming close to Mark. It's like you said, it's Cota, it's Sachsenring, it's Aragon. These attracts people just kind of write off mentally when they start the season.
I'll make my graphic later. I mean, I'll get the sprint winner graphic done. I'll get the GP graphic done.
Yeah. And the thing for Bez, I think it's going to give him a lot of confidence, a lot of kind of self approval motivation, like I can do it, I am here to do it. And for sure he's going to be closer to the front, but I don't think he's going to be challenging.
Do you think it's realistic to say top five?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, top 10 to like just touching top five, I think, fighting for that.
And the feelings of Hondas and everything else, you reckon they're going to be similar situation? Sorry, Craig, were you going to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I mean, but I'll answer as well. Like, the thing for the Hondas is you really, at the moment, unfortunately, only have Zarco to look at.
No Marini this weekend as well.
No Marini this weekend, so Alesha will be back, most likely, unless Honda just don't do it. Because I think Chantra's back with Idemitsu. So, yeah, maybe Alesha's there. Alesha didn't really set the world alight in Silverstone, considering how well Zarco did.
Except Morbidelli,
yeah, he did. came close to it. And then, yeah, Mir, you just, he's, I, one thing I will say, he will give you 150% to be first, but whether he can achieve it and stay on is, there's a consequence to trying that hard. And yeah, the dark horse for me, and the one I think is definitely worth keeping an eye out, is Moto2. So Colin Vyer is injured, and his replacement this weekend is Danny Munoz,
That's right, yeah.
who Declan will know very well. He's come from the Stock 600 championship in Junior GP, went into Moto2 with the Pracanos gas up, level up, I think, and then that team fell apart, disintegrated, and he's with the Clint Forward team
Yeah.
in Junior GP. But yeah, he's got an opportunity now to ride on the KTM IO Moto2. So I think Home Rider, who is unbelievably talented, has an opportunity on a good bike with a good team. So let's see. Maybe he can upset the apple cart. I don't think he will. I think it'd take him a little bit of time to get used to his environment and surroundings. But I think for sure he'd be one to watch.
And definitely that bike. I think definitely that, because now he has to convert from, because it's a Kalex he's on now. He's going on onto a Kalex.
Yeah, so he's gone from the Forward bike to a Kalex now. Yeah.
Chassis. I think that's going to be a big role because he's fast on that Kalex. But then I just, he got on that Forward bike. Like it looks like he just finally figured out like how to do it at Jerez. Like he's figured out how works, you know what I mean? And it's crazy to see the difference in chassis when you swap between the two. You know what I mean? It makes a difference. It's crazy to me.
Especially in that Moto2 class, like the differences are so minute, but they make such a huge difference. So you could be on a Kalex but on white power suspension, and you're kind of nowhere. Or you could be on a Bosque Oscuro with Olens and be nowhere, but your teammates lead it. It's so up and down.
Yeah, I
Does
totally
it
agree.
fill you with confidence, Declan, knowing that someone in your paddock is now going to a world championship for a ride? Does it fill you with confidence or a sense of motivation that that could be me next time? Any thoughts on that?
100%, you know what I mean? It's always good to see like someone in our championship, or our whole thing that they do. It's always good to see them go up, like especially even Senna, because like I didn't know Senna at the start. But I knew Senna at the same time. And then when I went to Australia, I met Senna and was actually hanging out with Senna a lot. I used to do a lot with Senna. So it's cool to see them all go up and go in. But it's just crazy to see how hard it is to actually get in. Like when you're trying to get in. Like you can win the Junior GP Championship, but trying to get that ride to go in, and like when you get in there to go fast, like you're going fast, but you're still 15th place in the actual Moto2 World Championship. It's just crazy of how I see it all. Like it's just so crazy how fast they go in Junior GP, and then as soon as they go in the World Championship, it's just another level.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing to see there. Very good thing to see.
I like it. That'll be
Yeah,
you next.
I think Senna's the first in a while to make the jump and now be at the top. It still took him some time as well. I think before him was Tulovic, and he got 1 year and then was replaced by Senna. But yeah, it's amazing to know that there is that pathway. But it's like Declan said, it's hard. It's the same thing when you come up from, say, like a regional championship into a national one, the level moves on. And then when you go from national to European, the level moves on. And then from European to the world championship, yeah, it's a big step that to make.
Yeah, I spoke to Lucas Brown when he was with us, British Talent Cup champion, moving to Red Bull Rookies. He said that the level is just, here's one level, now here's the next, and it's like, wow, these are fast, and it's incredible to see that. Because I think from the outside perspective, it's so difficult to see that from a fan, because you just think, well, put him on that bike, he'll do well. But there's so much to go into it—the backing, the team, knowing and feeling comfortable in the surroundings, and everything else—it just has to fall into place for it to really click. And I think the the finer details is something that is still not understood by many fans today. Even myself, I'll miss out on the finest details between that, from going from one thing to another and immediately being successful. Because I think we all expect the likes of Pedro Acosta to just waltz into one championship, waltz to the next one. Next thing you know, he's a MotoGP, like the computer game.
Yeah.
But it's really not that simple.
Yeah, no. It's so hard. Just a different ball game. So different.
And also, you know, the biggest thing that kind of goes unsaid is the level at which these teams have support. So you may be riding a Kalex, you may have Olin suspension, but you've got customer spec suspension and a three-year-old Kalex frame, you know. Yeah. Whereas Manu Gonzalez has the latest, greatest prototype Kalex frame and Olin suspension that's not available to anyone else. You know, it's these little things make a huge difference, especially in a class where you all have the same engine, you all have the same tires. Then you have to find your advantage elsewhere.
And does this extend to MotoGP as well, to the top level? Do you think they're still getting hand-me-down parts and things? Because we are with the GP24 Ducatis going to the next ones in line.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for sure the satellite teams will. And I think Chantra is not on the same bike that Zarco or Marini or Mir are. I think the Ducatis have always been a bit fortunate. Like, so Aldeguer, Marquez, Morbidelli, those bikes were there last year. They were Martin, Pecos, and
Frankie's.
I can't remember them. And Frankie's, yeah. So, yeah, the data's already there. The bike's already been set up for the year. So, yeah, Ducati's a different story. And then I think the rest, KTM are probably running four factory spec bikes, same as Yamaha. So that's where a lot of them, and that was Ducati. Ducati moved the ball game. They moved the level up. Yeah.
So final couple of thoughts then. I want to just ask the final question, which I guess is going to get the mind going a bit here, is that Jorge Martin, just that name at the moment is just really setting the world on fire, but the Aprilia contract is getting...
Finally.
Finally. Now, finally. My understanding is, Craig, that you wrote in our notes today is that Martin is Declan's boy.
Yeah.
So he likes Martin. So what do you think then, mate? Where's he going and who's going to replace him?
Me and Craig were touching up on this a little bit. Like, we sat down for a while trying to actually figure out where would Martin go. And I still can't figure it out. Like,
it's a mess.
You know, yeah. I think if he could get on a Ducati again, he'd be so much, not just like so much better, but because now he has to restart from scratch. You know what I mean? Like, we saw it when he was sore and tried to ride just coming out. Like, it's just going to take him that time to get back. But I think but the only problem is there's only one factory Ducati. But it's like what Craig said. I was saying, oh, maybe he should be Alex Marquez's teammate. But then they got Fernandez, the younger kid now. And he's just, yeah, Aldeguer, yeah. And he's just now firing off. He's already gotten on podium. Like, he's at the front now.
Yeah.
So, and he's young. So why would they get rid of him? Which is what Craig said, you know? So I would love to see him go on a Ducati for sure. Like, it'd be cool to see him go on a Ducati. I don't know, just because of how comfortable he would be. But, you know, Craig has the other answer for what we talked about, for what he thinks he should go. So, you know, but I think Ducati, he'd be able to do something.
I think his only other option is Honda, and I can guarantee you Honda are not going to put a performance clause in that contract. Because KTM did, and he left. He was supposed to come up into KTM, and he went to Pramac based on, yeah, on the performance clause. Aprilia as well. And I think he's getting unfairly judged in this one with the Aprilia, because his argument was, I haven't ridden the bike, so how can I decide? And Aprilia have said, well, your contract says six races. It doesn't say anything about riding the bike. So in a way, it was, you know, Aprilia sticking to their guns that Martin probably felt forced to make the move. And I think he's a bit unfairly being judged for that because he can only make a decision based on the facts in front of him. Based on the facts in front of him, considering Bez just won, I think he should have stayed. At least for a year. I mean, what has he got to lose? And then he can lose, he can leave on a more positive note. Whereas now, yeah, the rides are filling up and people are looking at it as though, well, you've burnt bridges with two manufacturers and you didn't leave Ducati on the happiest of terms. So why should we take you? He's going to be lucky to get like a contract that's representative of his talent.
I will echo what you're saying regarding the judgment side of it, because this is a man who, in the minute, is currently in turmoil. You're the MotoGP World Champion. You're the best of the best. You're the pinnacle of the world championship, and you can't ride. You can't do anything. So
No.
you have to just sit and watch. And I do understand it's probably killing him. And thinking about contracts and thinking about this is probably just a knee-jerk reaction in some regard, because he's thinking, well, I'm going to come back. I'm going to come back. I'm going to get back on that Aprilia and we'll do well. And he's looking down the order and he sees Ayagora's form has suddenly gone to where we expected. Raul Fernandez has still not done anything this season. And Marco Bezzecchi's had a, I don't want to say this, but in some people's eyes, a fluke win. So it doesn't fill you with confidence to think that, oh, I'm coming back soon. I can't wait. It puts you in the sense of, I don't know, maybe I should just leave and get out of there. But silly as it sounds, there's still no harm in him re-signing with Aprilia, but with a different contract. It's still possible.
True.
It's still a possibility for sure. I think maybe he's going to take it and look at what options he has. I think definitely now that Marini's ICU'd himself, Honda are going to look at Martin.
But as you say, will he get that contract that looks favourable? Because I know Nick was saying about going back to Ducati, but I can't see Jorge Martin as
Neither.
someone who's, I don't want to say stubborn, but has certainly got a personality and a strong opinion about himself and what he's capable of. I don't think he'd ever go back to Ducati, even if they offered him billions.
Really?
I don't think so. I think he's one of those personalities that would never go back to something that's not worked. Prove me wrong, by all means, but I think he'd rather just do anything else than to go back there again.
Yeah, I think the thing with Ducati is I think what Martin wants is a level of respect that he feels towards him. And now that that wasn't delivered initially, Ducati are going to have to double down to deliver. And I don't think Ducati are going to do that.
As nasty as it sounds, they don't need him now because of his injuries.
Yeah, exactly.
And they got Mark, and they know when Mark goes, they've got Pecco.
And as you said earlier with what Declan was saying, Aldeguer is looking great. He's actually done exactly what we thought he would do. Probably some people would say he's still a little bit immature yet, but no, I think he has proven his maturity and how quickly he does adapt to these larger bikes, because he went down, a similar route to what Declan's doing from the junior GP all the way to up to MotoGP. I don't see Ducati moving on anyone, and he's not going to take him to the Valentino Rossi team or anything like that. I can't see that
No.
happening.
Yeah, no.
No. I think the only non-Italian they'll take is maybe Pedro.
Pedro, that's a big one. That's a big one.
Nice segue, because what's Pedro going to do? I do believe that he has squashed the rumours about him leaving KTM now.
Yeah, so he's re-signed his allegiance. He hasn't signed anything, but he's come out publicly and said, "I'm not leaving. You know, this is where I am. I'll stay."
So now the question is, has Toprak Razgatlioglu signed with MotoGP team? Has this happened? And this continues.
I
What's the
saw
thoughts
some
on that?
with Toprak and Yamaha. I saw something about that. I thought it was going to be Toprak BMW, but now I don't even know if it's all lies or anything, but I literally saw Yamaha Toprak or the thinking of considering him or something like that, or like doing maybe a year or something like that.
Yeah, I mean it depends who you read or who you believe, but the alleged deal is 1 year with Pramac on Michelin next year, and then another year on the Pirellis. And I think the reason they're all so keen to get him is because of his experience on Pirelli tires. But I don't know how that's going to go. I think his riding style is very suited to a production-based bike like the Superbike. I think the prototypes are just maybe a bit too stiff and finicky for his way of riding.
Yeah, because he doesn't really get off the bike at all. He kind of just like leans the thing over and just touches his elbow. You know, he's not like fully crunched over doing the whole thing. He just kind of sits there and just goes over, you
Yeah.
know?
And speaking
Yeah,
of
I
World
mean,
Super. Sorry, go on, Craig, go on.
no, he has phenomenal bike control.
Yeah.
But I don't know how far that will get him in MotoGP.
Yeah,
And
I
speaking of
agree.
World Superbike, what about the other side to the Italian Nicola Buliga? There's even rumors now hotting up that he might
Yeah.
come to MotoGP, which, to be honest, I'm thinking more Buliga would be better suited to MotoGP than Top Rack would. He's been around that paddock a lot longer. He's been with those prototype bikes before in the form of the Kalix. And I'm not sure if he's tested a MotoGP bike, but I feel like he might have done at some point. I'm not sure. So who knows? Maybe he would be well suited. And he's one of Gigi Deligna's boys, you know? They look
Yeah.
after their
Yeah.
own.
And he's a academy rider as well,
A
which
former
is,
academy rider.
yeah, former. But the VR46, the whole purpose of that was to bring those riders up. But I heard an interesting take that they've kind of done that. There's a lot of them in the grid already. So maybe now they look at someone like Pedro or, you know, why they took Digi.
Yeah. And I think the Yamaha situation with Toprak, I have heard rumour that it could be Toprak and Martin. Now that could be fantasy, but I guess that if there's a team that would take Martin back under no circumstances whatsoever, or under any circumstances, it would definitely be the Pramac team. They have no love, you know, there's nothing to, they love Martin, the relationship was fantastic, and I'm
Yeah.
pretty certain they'd welcome him back into the fold without any qualms.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Martin to Yamaha, what's your thoughts on that?
I told Craig, I was like, I don't know why, I just can't see him on a Yamaha. I don't know why. Like, I've seen him on a Ducati for too long, and I don't know, changing to blue? I don't know, just a little different. I think it'd just be very different.
He might be like Lorenzo in that regard. Tight
Yeah.
corners, really tight lean angle. It could work out well.
Very true. Very true. You're very right.
But would he then take a satellite? Because clearly Martin's hang up is do not give me a satellite contract. I'm here for factory or not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
It's a very.
would Yamaha just dismiss Rins in order to get Martin?
Maybe.
Probably. Probably.
Yeah.
Where's Rins been at this season?
10th, 12th,
Yeah.
15th, round about there.
Yeah. Yamaha don't think they want that. You know what I mean?
And I think
Yamaha.
it's very believable that Pramac Yamaha will be moving on with Jack Miller and Miguel. So the probably two opportunities there would be most realistic.
Yeah, true.
Maybe they
True.
could sign Declan Van Rosmalen.
I mean,
Man.
you're already on a Yamaha.
Hey man,
It's a nice transition upwards.
you know,
Yeah.
maybe I'll pay 10. Maybe I'll just to let me ride it. I'll pay 10,000 euros a weekend for that. Right.
We'll
I'll pay a little bit. Give it to me.
all chip in.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Sounds good to me. Oh man.
Well, any final thoughts on the predictions for this weekend or MotoGP in general, boys? Anything that we might have missed?
No, dude, I think we got everything. I don't know. Craig?
Yeah, I mean it's going to be hard to follow up on how awesome the Silverstone weekend was for racing, but Aragon might come close. It just depends how much Mark wants to play with the others.
Hopefully a
Yeah.
lot.
Yeah. That'd be fun. That'd
Keep
be
it
fun.
close. Keep it
Yeah.
fun. We'll see how it
Yeah.
goes.
Exactly.
Well, gentlemen, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for both of you for being here tonight. It's been so good to see the camaraderie and the balance of the collaboration we've developed here tonight. So thank you very much for that, and I do hope we can do it again.
Yes, man. Thank you for having us, man. I appreciate it.
Always, mate. Always welcome here on the Knee Down Podcast. Craig, any final thoughts, mate?
No, good. Thanks for having me again. And yeah, let's see how Aragon unfolds.
Let's do it. But yeah, but a special shout out to Craig though for being excellent partner for the past couple of weeks with Knee Down, actually really chipping in and getting involved. And I just wanted to say a big thank you to you, mate. It's been a pleasure. So thank you very
No,
much.
very well.
All right, guys, thanks for watching or listening, depending where you may be. Massive shout out for Declan von Rasmalen. Don't forget, check him out on Instagram. What's your handle, Declan?
DeclanVR2. It's the one.
It'll be in the link down below if you want a quick link to that. And Craig, I don't know if you do social media that much, but you're more than welcome to plug your channel as well.
No, I mean, just give the team a follow. IOM Motorsports.
Yeah.
Craig's there you go, guys.
For Instagram nowadays.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, guys. See you next time. Ciao for now.